Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast half full editor. Joining me as always is my colleague and co-host, David Wondrich. How are you, Dave?
Good. How are you?
I am very good. I am excited. We have a special lineup for this episode, a special show. We are going to be joined by our good friends, Robin Nance, Senior Manager of Trade Engagement for BM Suntory, an award-winning former brand ambassador, and then also our friend, the award-winning and illustrious bartender, Jeffrey Morgenthaler, author of The Bar Book and Drinking Distilled. Jeffrey, I think, is currently our most frequent guest on Life Behind Bars since we launched, so
It's an important title, and he's earned it.
He has definitely earned it, the red jacket for our most frequent guests. So welcome, Robin and Jeffrey.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
The four of us have been talking, you know, individually in small groups about the pandemic and its effect on bars and bartending and bar culture, you know, especially as we open up as things, you know, hopefully knock on wood or only going to get better. And Dave and I thought, like, why not get us all together on one episode to chat? Last year, we did a big program that Jeffrey, you were part of, called Bartenders at Home. And, you know, we had then, bartenders, obviously, who were furloughed making drinks. And then we had a series of podcasts, you know, with bartenders talking about, you know, different issues affecting them, you know, during the pandemic. And, you know, it was really interesting sort of, you know, in the middle of all of this to see how people were working and, you know, keeping, you know, their bars open and, you know, pivoting. And now I think it sounds crazy, but it feels sort of sudden that, like, we're coming to the end of this pandemic. And, you know, in some ways it seems like we've been in it for 10 years. In other ways, it seems like it's been 2 days. But clearly, I think the effects are going to be pretty long term for our industry.
Very long term. I mean, we're going to see, I mean, we're, you know, obviously outside of the obvious, which is, you know, so many places having to close permanently or reformat. I think that we're going to see a big shift in, I think we already have seen a big shift in the way service works and certainly in, bartenders and servers' attitudes towards service and guests and even, you know, management and ownership. This is, I think, just the beginning.
So they're going to be more accepting, right? And really, really happy with everybody's personal demands and all that, right?
I think the days of being totally accepting and people's tolerance for can we say bullshit?
Yeah, you can. And that's actually the right word for it too, I think.
Yeah, I think that's kind of going away, you know, at least for a little while. The service industry has put up with a lot, especially over the past year and a half. And I think that the tolerance is done. You know, I talk to bartenders all the time that are just, you know, I mean, people that were working during the pandemic. I was certainly working during the pandemic a little bit, and you know, just the basic tolerance for somebody having to police somebody not wanting to wear a mask to come up to the window to order, you know, just the most basic thing, having to deal with that every 15 seconds has just really put a different spin on service for us.
I mean, all that stuff comes at a huge psychic cost.
Oh, yeah.
You
know,
every time you've got conflict with somebody, that comes at a huge
psychic cost. And it was already hard. I mean, the job, it's not like the job was easy, you know. Bartenders have always had to have their eye on the scanning the, you know, the crowd, looking for, you know, so many things. And now, you know, we're going to pile on a bunch more.
Usually I work maybe, you know, two bar shifts a year, which is more than enough for me. But last year I didn't work any, and that was really, really good for me, because I was looking at what was going on. It's like, oh my God, what happened to these people? You know, some of these people used to be at least manageable, but oh my God.
It's
scary.
It's really hard.
Well, Jeffrey, you in May, you had published a story on Half Full called "Has the Coronavirus Pandemic Destroyed American Bar Culture?" And, you know, you talked about, you know, some of the, you know, the really, really hard circumstances, you know, facing bartenders and bar owners, you know, over the last year or so. But the tenor of the piece was also kind of, you know, asking people to like come back together, right? I mean, that's like, as we come out of this pandemic, like to use the bar as kind of the as a unifying force.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that piece really grew out of a conversation I had with a friend who's another lifelong bartender, who's talking about, you know, some of his staff, his younger staff, servers, wanting to not have to serve people who had voted for the wrong guy. And as much as I want to agree with the sentiment that that wrong guy was really wrong, we can't. That's a really scary road to go down for bars. This idea that, you know, bars are going to become so politicized that, like, we're going to stop serving people because they might have different political opinions. And I know that everything is so heightened right now and everything is so tense, but it was really a plea to, like, hey, we've got to figure out a way to, there's the common ground should at the very, very, very least be the bar, you know?
Well, I mean, otherwise you end up with bars that are monocultures, and those bars suck. No matter what the monoculture is, you know,
absolutely,
it doesn't matter. It's just I want to be like in a bar where there are people different from me who will tell me jokes I haven't heard before.
It's the sign of a healthy bar that everybody from all walks of life.
Yeah, you all come in and there's some weirdo there whose politics might be bad when they're online, but in person they're perfectly charming and pleasant.
Yeah,
I'll take it.
Absolutely. You know?
I remember I think it was the first story, Dave, that you wrote for Half Full about politics and drinking and how, not how politics drives one to drink, but how, you know, back in the day, you know, different politicians of different parties would meet at the end of the day for a drink. There was a bar in the Capitol. Yeah. There were bars that they would go to, and that, you know, seemingly over the last, I don't know, 10 years, maybe longer, there's almost nobody crossing the aisle, nobody working together. And I think you rightly, one of the things, the problems here is that nobody drinks together at the end of the day, right? I mean, it's harder to, like,
they don't, you know, see the human side of their opposition. You know, everybody's just like some political abstract. And if you're drinking with people, you go, okay, this guy's a real knucklehead, but, you know, he's kind of fun. And
yeah, a lovable knucklehead.
And we both love bourbon.
Yeah, both love bourbon. And you get all kinds of opinions like that. And those at least complicate things, and you see the humanity. If we can't drink together, that's a bad sign.
Very.
Coming out of this pandemic is also an opportunity to kind of reset, right, and change things up. And Robin, I know Halfway, we'd worked with you on a really interesting project, you know, with the blend, and, you know, called Refire, you know, kind of looking at, you know, a lot of different issues affecting, you know, our culture. And this is almost as an opportunity, kind of like after Prohibition, to reset our culture and to do things a little bit differently than we were doing before.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, obviously this has been a terrible time period for bar culture and the industry as a whole. But, you know, there's this incredible opportunity to learn and create something so much better. And a lot of the conversations that I had been having with folks was, you know, how do, obviously also looking toward, you know, so many people were having conversations about getting out of the industry. And, you know, I was getting messages from people that were like, oh, I'm thinking about going back to school and doing this and doing that, and seeing sort of that, yeah. The future, which we're in now, where, you know, people are struggling to hire folks. And it's because no one is going to work for, you know, a non-livable wage anymore. And there was a lot of realizations that people came to, and, you know, ReFire was kind of born out of that. And it's multifold. It's not just about, you know, wages, although we do address that, but also, you know, I think we like to think we're super inclusive as an industry, but we leave a lot of people out. And so really just addressing how to become a broader, more inclusive community, and also how to fight for, you know, the respect and the pay that people deserve to be the servers of their community. You know, like this industry feeds and nourishes their community, and they're treated less than. That was really the inspiration behind the project.
It's a really interesting project, and touching upon like a livable wage, I think. The pandemic really showed sort of the problem with a lot of the business models of bars, you know, especially craft cocktail bars, you know, in America, that, you know, really weren't able to shut down even for a few weeks, let alone months. You know, I think we, you know, we're at a point where maybe we need to reevaluate the business model and kind of focus on making sure that bars are profitable enough that they can pay a livable wage, that people can have health care, that it can be an industry where people want to work, you know, for their whole career, kind of almost going back to, you know, in some ways, you know, the way that the bar industry was, you know, maybe, you know, in the 1800s, right, or before Prohibition, where it was an honorable profession, one that you could work in and make a wage to support yourself.
Absolutely. I have a lot of passion around livable wage and just generally how the whole business model needs to be re-examined, as you mentioned. I think of it this way, like if the people that are keeping you in business and are representing you as an owner of a business can't eat or can't pay rent or are struggling, then how successful is your business really?
And the focus for so long has been, you know, obviously getting people to drink better. I mean, I think thankfully we're there, right? I mean, like, you know, 20 years ago, you walk into a bar, there were no old fashions, right? There were, you know, you asked for a martini, it was made with chocolate sauce and, you know, coffee liqueur, right? I mean, it's like, we're definitely there, but it's, you know, a lot of the episodes that Dave and I did during the pandemic, talking to people, you know, in the middle of, you know, of COVID, was that, you know, they realized like, look, like, we got to get back to giving people drinks that they enjoy drinking, that taste good, and maybe some of the more expensive and rare ingredients that, you know, we're using, like, you know, an eighth of an ounce in a cocktail or as a rinse, like it wasn't economically viable anymore. And maybe it's not economically viable at all to like make those types of drinks. And do you think that we'll see drinks change, you know, coming out of COVID to make them more profitable, bigger profit margins for the bars?
No, they're not going to be $8 anymore, I can tell you that much. It's so funny, like we were always the holdout in Portland. Like we, you know, my boss always felt very strongly that we, you know, not overcharge our guests for drinks. And so, you know, our drink menu ranged from $7 to $12 at Clyde Common for a long time.
Yeah, it was always quite recent.
Yeah, and then with the pandemic, I feel like everybody that was doing the same thing, everybody just went, fuck it, $15, you know? which seems to be kind of like the base price these.
Well, I mean, otherwise you gotta finance this somehow, and otherwise it comes out of the head bartenders or the sort of the most experienced people's
pay packet.
because those are the people who are actually making money.
It comes from a lot of places. I mean, it's tough. We're already seeing, at least in Portland, you know, not a lot of places downtown. Downtown is very expensive, and if your primary cost is rent with labor costs coming in number two, and especially if you want to pay people properly, mm-hmm. and you want to make labor costs, then maybe downtowns don't exist for a little while. We've seen that before in history, certainly in American cities, and I think we'll probably start seeing that again
here in New York. It's sort of weird. I've noticed one encouraging thing is a number of bars that I thought closed for good and even some restaurants are suddenly open again.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I suspect that's due to the fact that their landlord wanted to kick them out but couldn't find anybody else, and they finally came to an agreement. But that's my guess.
That's a very good guess. Yeah, that's how that works.
That's how that works. It's all right. We're stuck with each other. But again, like, you're right. It's not in the heart of downtown where pedestrian traffic. I mean, Manhattan's always, and New York is always a little weird because the downtown is such a hyper downtown. Mm-hmm. But it's in places like downtown Brooklyn as opposed to downtown Manhattan. There are a lot of bars that are open again, and it's amazing. But that's a place that's got a lot of people who live there and that has a community already. Places that aren't community, I think, are probably still going to be in trouble because the business patterns aren't coming back.
And I think that's a good point. I mean, we still don't know, right? I mean, so many people have moved around because of the pandemic, mm-hmm. and a lot of companies haven't announced yet what they're going to do with their offices, that potentially a lot of the people who moved out of big cities across the country for Portland, Maine, to Denver, to all over to Vermont, may not have to come back. I mean, I think in the back of all of our minds, we always had this idea that everybody who left New York or Chicago or LA or San Francisco would have to come back at some point, right? But like, there's also a scenario where a lot of companies realize, well, maybe we don't need to rent 10 floors of an expensive, tower downtown.
Yeah. And suddenly you don't see five bars located, within a block or two of those 10 floors downtown, right?
Exactly.
On the other hand, I was out in the country about 100 miles from New York on the upper Delaware River in the little town of Coshocton, New York. And it's a pair of classic hipster bartenders who worked at various famous New York bars opened a bar up there 2 years ago, and they were struggling a little bit. I was just up there a couple of weeks ago, and they're booming. They're opening a liquor store across the street. Amazing. So it's possible that this stuff is just going to meet the people.
Right. And we'll see more bars in places that never really had craft cocktail bars or craft cocktails.
Because the people who are moving out to those places have expectations. Once you give people good drinks, made with care in a really pleasant bar environment, I think people have a hard time going back.
Agreed.
They want that, wherever it is.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Well, Robin, have you seen in Chicago, big changes in the bar scene now? Still fairly shut down, or places sort of back open? Or
it's starting to kind of open back. There's definitely some kind of industry faves that have not reopened. There's a couple of places that transitioned to sort of like the takeaway model, mm-hmm. That are now transitioning back to actually being an inside restaurant, like seating people inside. So it's starting to happen. There's a few places that aren't coming back. Sadly, my like local favorite 36 years open was a victim of COVID. So there's a few sad stories, but I think for the most part, it's starting to open back up. I mean, we definitely were one of those cities where quite a few people moved. It's interesting. I've been spending a lot of time down in Louisville, and like the housing market down there is out of control because mm-hmm. so many people moved there. And yeah. I think there's a lot. You saw all the people from LA moving to Austin, and you know, you've got all of these smaller cities that just got this massive influx of people. And when I go out down there, it's wild. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's like nothing ever happened. So
it's like all of the places that, you know, you go on vacation or you visit for work and you think, oh, wouldn't it be amazing to live there? You know, like, oh, mm-hmm. like if only I could move my life to Louisville. I've thought about it more than once. I'm not going to lie. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, in the last year for a lot of people, it allowed them to do that. Like they could pick up. I mean, a lot of, you know, friends, colleagues definitely did that, you know, were sort of able to live out this fantasy, you know, of moving to all these places that we think about. And some of them also, like, you know, we've seen this over the last few years, you know, a lot of these smaller towns, cities, villages also allow you to, like, you know, you always wanted to open that liquor store or that bar mm-hmm. or that bakery or whatever it is, you know, where, you know, that dream is like ever harder in New York or Chicago or LA, where the rents are just so through the roof that, you know, there you need a lot of runway and you need it to be a hit immediately, where, you know, I feel like every show on, you know, TV is, you know, went from people flipping houses to people like redoing, you know, down and out towns to like make them, you know, their dream town, you know, which now has, you know, a fancy ice cream shop and a letterpress store and, you know, and all the things that, like, you know, one fantasizes about.
All the things opening. You need in a city, an ice cream shop and a letterpress shop. It's done.
Like, where is this town? Right. I want exactly. to
we don't need
why go anywhere else? Running.
Right. Shoemaker, oh. No thank you.
Like, I haven't left downtown in 4 years. We got a letterpress place. We got an ice cream shop. I got everything I need.
They got kombucha.
Yeah, I think we've just described downtown Portland, perfect, but I could be wrong.
It's not like that anymore, I'll tell you. But, you know, to your point, you know, people saying I've always wanted to pack up and move to a smaller town. Another thing is happening. People saying I've always wanted to quit the service industry. And right. you know, I've got two of my bartenders, yeah. you know, since Clyde is looks like probably not coming back. Two of my bartenders are already personal trainers that have just they're like, yeah. I don't want to tend bar anymore. I don't ever, you know, I'm done. And I want to, you know, I want to do something healthy.
There were a lot of people who were in it who couldn't leave because they were making such uh-huh. good money.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think the one thing that I do hope that we hold on to with all our might is sort of that slow down and sort of embrace. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know I personally, I went through, you know, I was traveling 75-80% of the year and that came to a screeching halt. And about 3 months in, I was like, I've been exhausted for 10 years.
Yeah. I know, right?
It's yeah.
A decade. I've been so tired. Oh yeah. For a couple of days. No, for 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, having a year without 6 a.m. or 5 a.m. wake-ups to go to the airport was amazing.
Yeah.
Or not worrying about like the weather in Atlanta, even if you're yeah. not flying anywhere near Atlanta, but you know the plane's coming from yeah. there and, you know.
The sound of a suitcase unzipping is traumatic now.
The handle coming out of the back. The telescoping handle. Well, I think, Robin, one of the things we had that you had talked about it in the Refire series was also like it being more inclusive, right? And trying to, like, you know, even things like bar design, right? You know, trying to encourage, you know, more people to come into the industry and stay in the industry. And even looking at things like the way that like the bar is set up so that it would allow people of all, you know, shapes and heights to work behind the bar, right? And I think that's, yeah. Those are things that we never thought about. And in places like New York, it's so dictated by like the ridiculous price of real estate that you put in a bar, and kind of the service side of the bar is an afterthought, and you just have to contort your body into that space, whether it's good for you or not. Like, and maybe that's something that can change too after the pandemic.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that is sort of the space where I have grown quite a deep passion, and obviously, you know, coming from this industry for years and understanding, like, you know, chairs are dollar signs and get as many covers in as you can, and understanding that. But I think it's a symptom of a poorly established system, you know. But when you have conversations like with Virgie, I mean, obviously I have a lot of passion around the Virgie conversation, Virgie Tovar, who did our weight discrimination conversation. And just when you hear the numbers of larger bodied individuals in the United States who are excluded from spaces because they aren't built for them, and the amount of money that's being left on the table by not catering to that audience, it's interesting because you start to think about, well, we've always been taught, you know, cram as many seats in as possible, but what if we did allow for space and allow for different bodies and people with different accessibility issues, and maybe we didn't have as many seats, would we still make the same amount of money because we'd be catering to an audience that no one talks to? So it was a really interesting conversation to have and a concept to kind of, you know, start to wrap your brain around. You know, I mean, in that one talk, it was, you know, 70% of Americans are plus size, and they spend on average three times more than straight size people and shop 90% more often. So like just those numbers, you're like, oh, wait a minute. And some of the really, and I do, you know, you mentioned as we build out venues, considering things like that, but even some of the easy stuff, like just listing information on your website so that people know about it, have access to it, training people who answer the phones to be able to answer those kinds of questions so that people feel welcomed. Like that's that piece of that community that I think we're missing. And, you know, things like, I mean, this is something that I've gotten really passionate about in the work that we do with PowerPoint presentations and things like that. You know, are you considering people that might be colorblind when you design your menu?
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. There's just so many things that alienate a lot of your community and a lot of your guests that are really easy to solve for.
I think one of the things we need to recommit ourselves is the hospitality aspect.
Yes.
It's hard. I mean, you know, going back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the episode, you know, about, you know, systemic burnout and just how hard the pandemic has been on bars and bar owners and bartenders. But I think, you know, the success lies in sort of a recommitment to hospitality and trying to welcome guests and make them feel as comfortable as possible. And hopefully that expands the number of people who want to come. And
but doesn't that also after the pandemic and given also what we were talking about, now it seems like there also needs to be maybe a code for the guest as well, like maybe some kind of new Sasha Petrosky milk and honey rule for, you know, this is,
yeah,
here we are, this is how you behave, this is how we'll behave. Let's have a little contract here. We're going to take as good care of you as we can, but you're going to have to not be an asshole.
We're already seeing it. I mean, that's already simmering. You know, you're seeing a lot of places with rules that it's kind of a zero tolerance policy on being assholes.
Somebody's got to do it to these people because they need to learn.
Well, also just sort of a redefinition of the term hospitality, right? I mean, I think that a minority of customers, that means carte blanche, right? The no matter how absurd they act or, you know, their request, that the customer is always right. Right. Which is not fair.
It's not sustainable.
No, a lot of people were really catered to in this like modern age of like extreme hospitality. You know, I would watch bartenders bend over backwards sometimes to help a guest that really just wanted to be difficult. And while watching the entire rest of the bar just die because, you know, we're spending all our time being hospitable to this very difficult person, and now nobody's getting a drink because one guy just feels like being a fucking asshole.
Oh, it's like the Danny Meyer story where the guy left his wallet in the cab and they like tracked it down, and the conversation around, well, what happened to everybody that wasn't being taken care of while that person was
getting a wallet out of the cab? Exactly. It seems, I mean, in that regard, it seems like bad hospitality to me, you know?
Somehow, if we could, you know, maybe it is rules, maybe it's you know, pushing out the really bad apples and then focusing on making the other people feel comfortable.
There's a model for this, you know, that's been very successful for very many years, and that's called the dive bar.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Where you go in and you start acting like an asshole, and first the bartender ignores you, and then everybody else ignores you, and then you get thrown out.
Right.
You know, I mean, first the bartender makes fun of you, actually, and you know, is like, all right, you're not quitting. Oh, then now I'm going to ignore you. Now you're out. You know, now you're banned.
And you're banned. You're not coming back. Like, yeah. Well, I know, like, you know, I won't embarrass my friend by naming him, but like, I know somebody who's banned from Swift, you know, one of my, you know, our favorite bars in New York, the Irish bar. And you know, and it was like, and you know, Matt, I don't know what happened, but that's it. Like they won't let him back in, and that's how it is. And there's no convincing them. And I respect that. You don't behave like you don't get the drink there. You don't.
But like it says at McSorley's, be good or be gone. Right. I mean, that model, it's just so many, kind of modern cocktail bar bartenders have this very, you know, sort of like elegant aesthetic of handling customers, etc. And we might need a little more bare knuckle in there.
And then to refocus our efforts, you know, away from the one person who, you know, it takes 30 exactly. minutes to then, you know, making other people feel welcome and focusing on creating the, you know, what our old friend and colleague Gary Regan would call like crack, you know, the talk in the bar, you know, the spirit, the, you know, the, that good feeling when you walk in. And I think so much of that has eroded for one reason or another over the last few years. I don't know. It's always a joy to see, you know, you're ever at a bar and Dale DeGroff, you know, is obviously a legendary bartender, and Dale, you know, is able to, you know, like you, Jeffrey, carry on four or five different conversations with people at once. You know, everybody has a drink. Everybody is happy. You know, those who want to be alone are left alone. Those who are looking to bend somebody's ear, you know, he's talking to them. You know, those two people who are looking to meet other people, he'll introduce you. I mean, that's a good bar. Like, that's a good, you know, that's the ideal.
That was what put Clyde Common on my best bars list back when I worked for another publication. was the fact that, you know, I went in and everybody was talking. Everybody was happy. It was a community. Yeah,
that was a really beautiful thing.
That was a beautiful thing. And that's, I mean, that's what that's what you can do if you can squish some of the troublemakers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can say, all right, you're not dominating. You know, we got a beautiful community here. The community is dominating.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the most important
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely.
And I think that also comes from, you know, the drinks too. And you know, maybe less of, more of a focus on getting people to drink what they like and adding a little bit more fun back in. I mean, I think, you know, we're all probably guilty of it, but getting very serious about cocktails and spirits, you know, and at the end of the day, it's cocktails and spirits. And I think people should be having fun. Like it should be fun to drink. It shouldn't feel like work. It shouldn't feel, you know, like they have to study to step up to the bar. They don't need to quote Dave when they're ordering a drink. You know, they should just order and they should feel not scared or nervous.
Come on, Noah, that's all I got.
But it should also impress bartenders. You know, it also it used to be a fun job as well. Yeah. You know, and it's not right now. It's really not a fun job. It's not a fun career. Right now, and that's heartbreaking. to see, you know, I mean, it's what kept me from continuing a career in architecture. Was I had more fun working in a bar, you know, it's like, I think I'll just stay and do this. And, you know, I'm tired of getting laid off all the time. I think I might, and I have a really good time. And I can show people a good time because I'm having a good time. And that's just not the case with bars and bartending right now. It's not fun. It's work. And
well, yeah. I've been to a couple bars recently that looks like the fun is coming back.
Great.
And that's very
great.
Yeah.
But it's always fun when you're in the bar, Dave. I mean, it's easy to fake it when Dave Wunderich walks in.
You know, the minute I'm gone, the
it just goes back. It's just fucking miserable. The minute you
they're all actors. They're all actors pretending to have a great time and laughing, slapping people in the back.
I know it would break my heart to think that they were having no fun.
You know, now I think, you know, after being over a year of not being in a bar, right, except for my home bar, has made me really, you know, it sounds stupid, but really miss being in bars and being grateful for the time that I get to spend in bars. And you know, I hopefully, you know, other bar patrons, you know, this time away will make them feel a little bit more grateful for the experience and maybe also give bartenders a little bit of a break and at this point, you know, come back and hopefully it is a little bit more fun. That's the hope anyway.
Your words to God's ear.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both for coming on. You know, it's not easy topics, but looking forward to hopefully seeing you both in person and sharing.
Oh, yes, please.
I would love that.
Yes, please. Yeah,
all of you.
I'll even drink one of Jeff's mudslides.
Yeah, and you know what? Happily, you will. Well, yeah, happily, and you'll have a big fucking smile on your face. Yeah.
Make it a double.
Dave and I encourage you to drink responsibly always.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.